Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour, December 10th, 2015, and this is the second in a three-part series dealing with what I call free living. In other words, you basically don't have any bills, and people go, well, I'd sure like to do that. Well, actually, you can, and I have been doing this for a very long time. I'm not a rich person. And you don't need a lot of money. In fact, the way you set it up is, you know, money is not a big issue in your life. And it takes a certain thing called personal responsibility. First, I want to talk a little bit about the Paris Climate Conference, which opened last week. I want to talk about the U.S. delegate to the conference, the delegate that Jonathan Pershing. I just want to talk about his background and who is representing you and what the real interests are here. He happens to be right now the U.S. He is the deputy director, Office of Energy Policy. This is under the Department of Energy, United States. The United States, you might say government, but is really the United States private corporation that pretends to be the U.S. government. What is the interest of the Department of Energy? Well, as with all department agencies in the so-called U.S. government, what their goal is to control the energy, and not in a good way. This is totally subverted by the energy corporations. So the Department of, the Transportation is managed by some of the same interests, the energy cartels, etc. The Department of Energy, managed by outside interests, primarily in the energy industry, and that this ownership goes all the way back up to the Rothschild banking empire that comes out of Europe, the Vatican front. The banking agency, basically, that started in the Middle Ages. The Department of Energy, why are they involved in global climate change policy making at the international level? This meeting, the Paris Climate Conference, is sponsored by the United Nations, another Rothschild front agency. This guy, Jonathan Pershing, got his degree. Let me see. He got in 1990. He got a postdoc at the U.S. Department of State. This is his background. So he's worked his way up. The go-getter, Johnny, really jump on it and run with it type of guy. But basically, a tier three scientist, if you want to call it that. Not really what I'd call a hard-hitting, high-level scientist. Between 2009 and 2012, he was the top U.S. negotiator and represents, guess what, the International Energy Agency. These people represent the energy industry, not your interests. And also is a part of the nonprofit World Resources Institute, another Washington think tank. This is directly fronted by the Rothschilds to control world resources. And remember if you remember, 2 weeks ago I defined a term I termed scepter, and this was part of the presentation I did for the Liberty Beacon, something that I'm now associated with, and a very good outlet for material. I'm the science advisor. And so that's something you want to look into, the Liberty Beacon, with a the in front. But anyway, I defined the term scepter. And typically, scepter means that staff that the king holds while he sits on his throne. But I gave it a new meaning. Scepter is spelled S-C-E-P-T-E-R. And so I used it as a mnemonic. And this is the control that the Rothschilds have over the world, especially the United States, which is the spearhead of all chaos and dominion on the planet. Science, communication, engineering, press or media, technology, education, and the last one for R is resources. Resources, the control of resources. And of course, very top, tippity top on that list is energy. So you can see this path of this person, Jonathan Pershing, who's the top U.S. negotiator at the Paris Climate Conference. And the assumption of all of these people there is that, hey, that there's a problem. When there is no problem, there is not a problem caused by greenhouse gases. This is all a giant myth. But look at this guy's background. The assumption is that there is such a thing as global climate change or global warming, etc. This is just such a giant mess. The United States is over there negotiating, and of course the mindset of this clown, Jonathan Pershing, is that he's doing a great job. You know, he's bird-dogging an important topic, and they don't even think about whether this is real or not. They have decided long ago, and here's the expression they use, that this is too complicated for the common person. This is kind of a Carl Sagan concept, like, don't allow the public to know anything about this because these people are experts. This is actually what Jonathan Pershing said. They were asking him about the discussions at the meeting. He said, no, this is high level. We can't talk about this to the public. All we can do is give some general results. And he said, most people won't even read the results that are coming out of the meeting. And basically, they're smart, you're stupid. You just have to do what they say. This is the attitude of the head negotiator. So these people are psychotic. They're stupid. They're tier three scientists at best. They represent the Department of Energy and the energy industry at the Paris talks. And this is supposedly the top honcho at the talks. So anyway, this is a disaster. Remember that the Paris attacks from ISIS were timed so that the French had control of the streets and could prevent the massive demonstrations that were bound to occur during this meeting of the Paris Climate Conference. Now the French can control it under the guise of terrorism. Yeah, these people have it all planned out. They control all of the punches. By the way, Merkel in Germany, Chancellor of Germany, was on her way out last month after the Paris attacks, which is the CIA, Mossad, ISIS attack on Paris. Merkel all of a sudden is back in power. She's at the head of her game all of a sudden again. These people are a piece of work, and she's the key player in the European part of the G20. Which is the all of the leaders of the basically the European banking cartel. And you'll notice that Putin is front and center. Little old Putin. So Obama's given a little powwow there. Putin, Xi Jinping of China is giving a talk there. So you got all your basically banker boys over there pumping this climate change conference. And this is going to be the new world government. This is ushering in the one new world government. Make no mistake about it. Just a quick note on anthropology, archaeology here. The discoveries in Monteverde, Chile, show that people existed in that area over 22,000 years ago. Now, remember that supposedly about maybe 6,000 years ago, people were supposed to have crossed the Bering Strait and populated the Western Hemisphere. Well, not true. There are vast cities along the Peruvian-Chilean border on the Pacific in which they have discovered cities where they estimate a 40 million people lived. Not a shred is left, and they consider that a big ocean wave came in, washed everything away, including the people, a giant tidal wave, and all that's left is just the stone cities. Enough for 40 million people. And this is so big, you can see it from the air, the crisscross, the roads, everything, a very well-organized city housing 40 million people. This is very much pre-Inca. They really don't know quite how to date it because the destruction was so complete there. but all they know is that it was probably about 10,000 years ago when this was populated. So the whole history of the planet that we're being taught is completely, completely incorrect. Incorrect. But at any rate, worth mentioning, they're creeping backwards in time, but of course trying to meld this in with the idea that somehow man populated the Western Hemisphere by this ridiculous story that somehow they migrated from Mesopotamia across Asia, across the Bering Strait, following herds of mastodons, etc. Nah, totally, totally fairy tale science. Okay, so let me start in with the part two of free living. Now, I want to preface this by mentioning that about 20 states are ready to break away from the federal union and go independent. Basically, we can't afford the federal government anymore. We can't afford it monetarily or in any other way. The insanity that's going on in the federal government is just far beyond out of control. All of the planned terrorism, the CIA, which is operating under the guise of the federal government, just insanity, absolute insanity. So about 20 states are literally ready to break away. And remember that the Civil War that happened in the 1800s was all about the states, the southern states, breaking away, had elected a president, basically was an independent country, and they were doing it because that was the ordinance of the original Constitution, is that the states were independent, and if they saw fit, they could do away with the status of the federal government. And that's why, of course, in 1871, the company known as the United States of America basically took over the United States. And in 1913, the Rothschild banking empire came in the day before Christmas, 1913, voted in, when nobody was looking, the Federal Reserve. Gave it a 100-year charter, and that charter expired in 2013. Yet they kept going, and that was one of the most silent, best-kept secrets on the planet, that the Federal Reserve Charter expired in 2013, and it was really never really ratified. In fact, by original charter, it had to be dissolved completely, and this didn't happen. So right now, the federal government is running on basically on air. It doesn't exist. Only as long as they can keep the charade going. They own the news media, they own the court system, they own the Congress, they own the president's office. You know, the three parts of the government which are supposed to contain checks and balances. There is no such thing as an election anymore at federal level. It's all appointees, agencies running around willy-nilly doing whatever they want, creating laws and basically subjugating people to penalties and taxes and every other kind of control. And these are not elected officials of any kind. So at any rate, what a mess. So about 20 states are ready to just slam the door and walk away, say goodbye to the federal government. And of course, that's going to create a giant mess, because these states then have provided a lot of funding over the years for military defense, and I imagine it'll be the supposition that they have to walk away and leave that. So this is a big problem. So there literally are over 20 states that are defining their own monetary system, etc. And this will be part of my talk tonight. We'll be talking about monetary systems. So these are very important core issues. What do you do for money? And when I say free living, remember that I'm talking about the ability to live without money. That means you have to take care of yourself, your food, your water, everything from milk to eggs to whatever it is, vegetables, your food, your shelter is all paid for, your transportation is paid for. And to a lot of people, this means, ooh, moving back to the cave ages, you know, go dig out a site in a cave and go live there. No, the whole idea is that we've become dependent on this federal government model, and working the 40-hour a week job, or two of them, or three of them, whatever the case may be, to make ends meet, and this is what you need to do to survive. And basically what they've done is enslave everybody. Back in the 1800s, of course, people lived in the South. The southern states that broke away were a great example of groups of people who lived very independently. You don't want to live off the land, hunting, fishing, etc. That's not what this is all about. But basically, next week, remember, I'm going to be talking about modern technology and education in a primitive, eco-friendly world. And so, in other words, you can still have technology, good education, and a spirit of moving into basically outer space, high technology areas, but without this insane federal government thing that's just, it's just become a monster, a big million tentacle monster that just is ever pervasive in your life. Simplify, free living means your house is paid for, your transportation, your communications, and there's a very long list of things that we use every day. But tonight I'm going to concentrate on the type of things you have to do, starting out with providing your own clean water. Many people, like if you go out and buy a piece of property, the first thing you're going to look around for is the source of water. You might have a little creek running through, there might be a stream nearby, there might be artesian wells. Artesian wells are near lakes or bodies of water that the pressure from the lake pushes the water through veins and channels up out beside the lake, and it comes up, literally just comes up out of the ground. So if you dig behind a rock or a hole in the ground, look for wet spots, start digging, and you'll find this water just coming up. And I've done this myself. I've learned this from some friends when I was young that lived by the artesian wells, by water from artesian wells. You first dig it out, and if you find a really good artesian well, get a backhoe in there, have them dig it out. You fill it in first with gravel, then with very fine sand, and increasingly fine sand from gravel, and this is washed gravel, not the kind that has clay in it. This is not the kind of gravel that you would use to compress for the foundation of our house. This is washed gravel, like stone, and granite stone or something like that, crushed up. Then you put finer and finer layers and ultimately sand on top of that. And as long as the water is coming up out of the ground, it should be free from bacteria and other contamination. So you could use that water directly for drinking and for laundry and whatever else you do. Have as many hand tools, hand-driven equipment as possible. That's the rule. You can have electricity. Some people want a generator. And certainly that helps get work done faster. But learn to use your hand tools. And I've said this before. Say you have some trees to cut down. It's actually easier in a lot of cases to use hand tools to cut trees down than it is to use a chainsaw. And I've used both myself. But if you start cutting down a lot of big trees, of course, no question the chainsaw is better. But there's a lot of maintenance involved in that, and when push comes to shove, you're not going to have that chainsaw. You're going to have to use hand tools. So learn how to use your hand tools safely. Buy hand tools with fiberglass handles that will last a lifetime, and that you don't have to worry about the like the axe head or the shovel spade coming off the shovel, etc. But at any rate, understand your tools. So, but back to water again. Some people might depend on rainwater. I've done that, where you have a collection coming off of the roof into a big tank. The best thing to do is have a sock or a piece of cloth where the water drains through and filters out the gravel and other dust and dirt that's in rainwater. And then there might be some people who have a well. But if you have a well, make sure you have a hand pump along beside the electric pump. And if it's too deep, you're not going to be able to pump by hand. You're going to have to depend on electricity to pump very deep well water. At any rate, water is the first thing you should conquer. Also, don't try and build the mansion first. Build a place where everybody can go. I would say do this. Don't spend more than a week building your initial first shelter. Have it so that you can live in there, you have out of the weather, warmth. And I remember I went to, I won't say where, but a place where it's very cold and it snows a lot. And lived there with a group of indigenous people. They were able to build a shelter, many different types of shelters, in a very short order, about a day or two, and have them up and facilitate, and then they also have them insulated so that they can they could be have a place out of the weather. And, you know, five or six people in a small area is very doable. A small place is easier to heat, is easier to keep dry, to keep the elements out, etc. Then you concentrate on the other things you need, your food, your daily water, keeping clean, hygiene, have a place where human waste, everything is concentrated in one place. And there are many, many good methods dealing with human waste. And so dry toilets is a good way, because you can use that as fertilizer, actually, on plants for food. Because the process of breaking down the human waste, the bacteria actually destroys the bad types of bacteria, etc., and you're left with basically a powder that you can put around trees, the base of trees, or you can put it in your garden or into a compost pile. The composting process breaks it down, and literally you can use it for fertilizer. So it's very important to understand a lot of these basics. A must is a greenhouse. In today's world of radiation coming in the rain, etc., you have to have a greenhouse. Once you have a greenhouse water, it's good to have your water container right in the greenhouse so that you can filter water. In fact, this is something some people have done. They take a 50-gallon container that are two of them that are stackable. They use the dome filters, which I sell on my webpage in 10 packs. They put 10 of those dome filters in the container, and they have years and years and years of fresh water that takes out the dust. Remember that radiation, when it comes in, is typically attached to dust. And so what you're doing is filtering that dust out, and then if you clean the surface of those filter elements regularly, you have radiation-free water for your greenhouse in quantity. And once you get the water in the greenhouse, and if you have water containers in the greenhouse that create humidity, and then that water drips back down the sides of the greenhouse and into containers, you have a cycle of humidity that occurs every day, and you recycle the water. Very important. But once again, I'm just giving you a few basic ideas. On the internet, there are tons and tons of sites where you get ideas on how to live. But keep it basically fairly simple. Don't spend too much time in trying to do things that are complicated. A small greenhouse, start out, even a greenhouse where the top lifts off, you walk in, tend the plants, etc., and then put the cover back down, is something that's easily manufactured. So you don't have to have this giant greenhouse to begin with, and then expand. Grow as you have time. And the other important thing is that kids have to learn how to do this. Kids today play video games and everything else, and it's really a parental disservice to let these kids grow up not knowing how to do anything. Because if that gets to the point, and it will someday, where these kids are dependent on their own means to survive, Have you really done them a favor by letting them play video games? Get them out in the country. Don't put in a TV at your remote location. Don't put in a television. Don't put in video games. Leave the computers back at the house in the city or whatever. And if you live there full-time, computers are a good thing. I mean, they're a necessary part of communication. But just like television or video games, you have to limit them and also monitor their use so they're not being used for just frivolous, for frivolous uses. You have to get kids away from all of the diversions that are in modern society. When I grew up, I didn't have these. We may have watched television as the family on Sunday night, or maybe there was a football game on Sunday, but it wasn't this 24/7 every day, 7 in the morning till 11 at night with the TV going. That's something that's really destroyed the family, destroyed the minds of people, etc. Center and core to the ability to live on your land, I encourage people to get professional gun training and own arms. This is a very important part of being a free nation. When I was a kid, I got gun training. All my friends had gun training. We used guns from the time we were little. Nobody got hurt. Everybody was used them safely. But the key is having professional gun training, someone who's serious, knows how to manage those things. The problem today is you get guns in the hands of Looney Tunes. And in fact, the whole idea of taking guns away from the public is ludicrous. It doesn't solve the problem. Because if they allow the Looney Tunes to have guns and the public not, clearly there's a problem there. None of these shootings would occur if people in these locations would have had guns and somebody comes in and starts shooting a place up. I told you the story in the Paris restaurant, and this never made the news. This actually made a feed in international television and then was completely wiped off of any news media. But at the Paris attacks of ISIS back in November, there was the restaurant, there was the stadium, and the theater where there was a rock concert playing or something. When in the restaurant, there happened to be three drug cartel guys there having supper. They just happened to have their heat with them, and when the four guys come in and start shooting, they threw over a table. This was on television. Somebody had taken a shot of this. It actually got out in the news media. These three guys throw over a table, pull out their guns, and blow away the four attackers. This never made the news media, especially in the United States, because what's the message? An armed public is a public that's not going to be attacked. And, of course, the whole message that they wanted you to understand or to buy is that you got to take guns away because of terrorism. Well, no, if the public has guns, the safest country in the world is Switzerland, where everybody has guns. They have military-caliber guns in their house. Many of the people that on the street, the adults, are armed. It's the safest place on the planet. That's because nobody in their right mind would go there and try and attack Switzerland or a bar or a concert or whatever. They wouldn't last a New York second because everybody is armed. So you never hear about attacks in schools or in theaters or in McDonald's or in a university or a college campus. You never hear about that in Switzerland because, like I say, they wouldn't last long because all those people are armed and they know how to use them. They've been trained. They've had military training since they were little. That's a safe country that has a lot of guns. And literally, everybody in that country has guns in the house. It's the safest country in the world. I don't know if I remember I announced last week, there was a study that came out and said that the United States is the most dangerous country to travel in the world. Think about that for a minute. The United States, with all its police force, with all its government, with everything else going on, is the most dangerous place to live in or travel in the world. I also encourage people to go hunting. And if you don't have a lot of game where you are, there's many places there are game farms. But it gives, here's the issue. Not that I necessarily encourage people to hunt, but it gives you experience in the field using your guns to, or archery equipment if you're so inclined, but to use your equipment in a situation which requires immediate response and accuracy and also safety. Because if, say, a bird flies up or something like that, you have to know where everybody else is. You have to use safety. You have to understand if there's people off in the distance, other hunting parties. This is all of gun safety training. How to use that gun and when not to use it. And how to control it, etc. How to clean the gun, how to take it apart. You have to know everything about that. There's a lot to know, and then there's a lot of experience involved. Even trained policemen who've been trained, they go through the entire police training course. The first time, or even sometimes, after they're a policeman with a lot of experience, get into a heated confrontation, they're working on pure adrenaline because somebody's shooting at them, pulling a gun out or something. You have to know exactly what to do. There's an expression called buck fever. And this happens to people. They get their training. They get, you know, they get their gun. They know how to shoot on a rifle range. And they go out in the field. And then here comes along a big buck. And they start shooting at random. Up in the air and shooting. And they unload their gun and never hit the buck because they're totally out of control. They don't even know it. And this is called buck fever. Then you couple that with other problems in the field, not knowing the terrain, etc. And you have a big problem. The person with the gun becomes a real liability to the other people in the group. So hunting and getting proper training, something that I had a tremendous amount of experience as a young person. And so I know, I've seen people do stupid things with guns. And so you need training. And for some parents may think, well, I don't know, I think that's too dangerous for my kids. No, it's dangerous not to have the training. Believe me. So do your kids a favor get them proper training. There's many programs, many good programs around. Search them out. And this is simply part of education because in the modern world, and I also encourage people not to go into the military because right now the military is being used for nefarious purposes around the world. So I encourage people to join, for example, a state militia. That's another place where you can get training under the guise of your local state government and by professionals. And these people are serious. They know their way around guns, and this is very serious business. Your kid's life might depend on the fact that they know how to use a gun in a heated situation. Say they're at a rock concert, say they're at a restaurant with some friends. All of a sudden, some government-sponsored terrorists come in and start shooting the place up. Their only defense is if they have an arm on them. That is literally the truth. And so you're doing your kids a favor by getting them proper training. And also, if they get in a situation where somebody has a gun, they would react differently if they had proper training. So at any rate, I believe it's imperative, and I really like the process in Switzerland where everybody gets gun training, and it's on a serious level. It's by professionals, and they get there's different types of training. Part of military training is very different than hunting training, but it all comes down to the same thing: safety, understanding your weapon, understanding what to do with it, what not to do with it, etc. So at any rate, I'm sorry for the bit of diversion here, but it's an extremely important part of modern life, because I'll tell you something, the bad guys do have guns, the good people in general don't. And for all of you people out there that think there should be gun control, if you have gun control, they're going to take the guns away from the good people. All the bad guys are going to still have guns. If they could go out and get the guns away from all the bad guys and be sure of it, then, hey, that might be a good thing, but that isn't what's going to happen. They're going to go out and take the guns away from all the good people and leave everybody, all the bad people, with the guns. That's part of the chaos process. So, at any rate, get a brain, get some training, get a gun. And I encourage women more than men, because men would be more naturally attuned to getting a gun and getting some training. But women, more than anybody today, should have training in firearms. And then get your kids trained. And it's like driving a car. It's something you should learn how to do today. You can't sit at home and say, oh, I don't want my kids to drive a car because it's dangerous on the road, and oh, there's bad drivers, so I'm not going to have my kid learn how to drive a car. That's the same thing. Kids need to learn how to handle arms and safely. And, you know, say they go over to somebody's house and that house has arms in it. They have to know if somebody starts pulling out guns, it's okay, I'm out of here. They have to know when, you know, they have to know safety first for themselves. They have to know what the limits are and what the dangers are, etc. So gun training has many aspects to it. So first of all, I encourage moms to go out and get gun training, and then get your kids trained professionally. So back to the topic of free living. If you're living freely and all of a sudden the bottom falls out, let's face it, the U.S. economy is already dead. It has been dead for a long time. They're just propping it up by various means. Gold is being propped up by various means. They're printing money. It's not even printing. It's just declaring money in existence. It's a number in a computer somewhere. But I want to reiterate this idea of basically having your place where you can live for free. Water, food, having a greenhouse, have chickens if you can manage to be there enough to feed the chickens, or have wild game. If there's wild birds in the area or deer, feed them so that they're around your place. That's another way of domestication. And then when you're not there, they'll go off into the woods and forage, etc. But that's how domestication of animals first began, by feeding them, and then they started hanging around. It's basically domestication of animals and maintaining them, etc. But, okay, there's so much information on the Internet available on how to do many of these things. I'm not going to try and educate you on this, other than to encourage you to go out and understand, develop a place where you can live literally for free. You've paid for it. Buy a place that's within your means. Start out with just basic raw land. Take an investment, you know, $5,000, $10,000, $20,000, whatever it takes. Land is at a very much a low price these days. Now is a great time to go out and buy some land someplace far enough out in the country, at the end of a dead-end road, or at the something that, this is something you always might want to look for, is some property that's backed up against a park or a reserve or a federal forest or a state forest or something like that. Possibly a lake, a big hill system where you're not going to have development around you in the future, and that'll be there for the future. It's almost like you're buying that property along with it, because in a sense you have it available. National and state parks are not as good because they have restrictions about going there, and they're much more controlled. So a park, in a sense, is not a great place to buy property next to a park, because you get a lot of tourism and traffic like that. And plus, you can't use that land as readily for just taking a hike or taking a walk. You know, on state or federal parkland, it's much more restricted. But state and federal forests, reserves, places like that are very good because they're typically very low traffic areas. And it's like that's almost an extension of your own property. So you don't have to buy 100 or 500 acres. You could buy 5 or 10 acres next to a reserve area or a federal forest or something like that. And then also it'd be handy if it had some kind of building on there for you to get started, or the ability to pull a little trailer there or something to get started. Make sure it has a water supply, and from there on, just start developing it. And, you know, here's the situation. Let me explain statistically. There was a time, and possibly still the people are doing this today, there was a time when people were selling what were known as safe maps. And let me tell you, there is no such thing as a safe map, because nobody can predict all the factors in the future of weather or climate or being invaded by groups of people coming out of cities where the economy has collapsed or whatever. Next, I want to talk about a couple of specific situations. Imagine that there's a general power outage, something that, say, they take down the grid, and typically this would be an intentional grid outage. NASA might come along and say, oh, it was a solar flare. But, you know, be that as it may, say there's something, a permanent infrastructure outage, but the most devastating one would be number one, electricity out, because that would affect everybody. Number two would be lack of water. That would affect everybody, and that's something else that they could either contaminate. Remember up in Portland, they contaminated. Nobody could ever figure out how this reservoir kept becoming contaminated with E. coli bacteria, and nobody could drink or touch the water. So these are things that would affect everybody. And if the cities start basically unloading into the countryside, this is my point. I want to give you the timing of this, because this is going to last at most about a week. I always tell people, if something goes on, you have to be able to go with your party, with your family or whoever. And I recommend keeping it small, keeping everybody notified, and having a plan in place so that you know where to meet, so that you're all not running around helter-skelter with your, like chickens with your head cut off, trying to find everybody else. Have a plan that everybody meet at the place, and you don't have to worry about cell phone communication, because that might be out. And then everybody knows where to go, and it's a much cleaner plan. But plan to be there at least 2 weeks, because here's what's going to happen. People are going to start right away by driving around in the family car or their motorcycle or whatever, and they're going to run out of gas pretty quick just by running around and doing stupid things, trying to run to the grocery store, trying to drive across town, get Grandma or Aunt Molly or whoever, or the kids that are off at somebody's house and then went someplace and didn't tell anybody where they went. You're running around like crazy looking for them. Most people are going to burn up their tank of gasoline doing things like that. So by the time they get around to driving outside of town, they're not going to get far. That's why you want to be at least, a tank of gas away from the major cities. Minor cities, not too big a problem, but still you want to be about a tank of gas away. So that's like, 200 miles, say, away from any major cities. That'll get rid of most of the traffic to where your remote place is. If you're 1 hour away, you're going to have a lot more traffic, people coming out scavengering, looking for things. And also it's probably worth that extra drive just to get away for the extra peace and quiet. Even on weekends when there's just tourism, you're going to be away from the majority of the tourism because people just don't drive that far. They want an hour, 2 hour drive, not a 4 or 5 or 6 hour drive. So you're better off being out in the country and that drive can actually be fairly easily planned for weekends. But anyway, you want to be a fair distance away from major metropolitan areas. And that's simply the reason, because when if a power outage or water outage or some major infrastructure, say an earthquake in L.A. or something like that, once those things happen, those people are going to come out and they're going to get about as far as that first tank full of gas. Then they cannot get more gas. And so as a result, that's where they end up. That's where they're going to stay. That's where they're going to get out of their car, start to scavenger for food, start to hold people up, start to cause problems because they don't have anything. They didn't plan for anything. And you did, and you got something, and they don't. Not too hard to figure that one out. And so, and that's going to last about 2 weeks till those people run out of gas. And literally after that, they're going to be on foot. They're going to be walking around, and you're going to have groups of marauding people until basically they run out of supplies. The farther you are away from major cities, the better. And so, and I know a lot of people who've just stopped being in a city altogether. That's my advice. Just drop out of that system. It's a system that's already failed. There's no future in it. What I'm going to talk about next week is living with modern technology and education and social development in remote communities. That's something that's going on today, and people are living a very fulfilling lifestyle. I am. I have an extremely full lifestyle, and I don't live near a city. I'm doing what I'm preaching here. I'm living a free living lifestyle. I don't have expenses. I'm not a rich person. My webpage does not produce tons and tons of money. And that money goes to support the radio show. It goes to pretty much consumed by other professional parts of my lifestyle. It's necessary for me to live a very modest lifestyle. But I'm happy. I'm able to travel. I'm able to do other things that I like. And that's another issue I'll be talking about next week, is how to travel basically on a budget. It's part of free living, is how to do all of the things we like to do in life, but without going to the Paris Hilton Hotel and paying, $600 a night. No, you'll never find me there. Never in a million years. But understanding how to accomplish all of the things that you have to do and not pay an arm and a leg for it. One thing I talk about is communication. In today's world, all you need is a good internet connection. You don't need cell phone service for everybody in the family paying $300 or $400 a month for cell phone service. You don't need it. It's insane, but you can have very good communication with a single internet connection, and everything you need to do goes through that one connection. The cell phone companies have a fixed. That's why Verizon tries to block my show and anybody getting to my webpage, because they're one of the big six cell phone companies that are trying to sell you a service you don't need. All you need is a good internet connection. But the way they have it structured is you have to buy the cell phone plan first, and then the internet is an add-on. Well, let me tell you something, boys and girls. You don't need that cell phone service at all, or all of the other add-ons, the voicemail and the voice forwarding and all the other garbage that they stick on there as individual items. That all comes with your service. So they talk about bundle and save. Well, what they're doing is bundling a bunch of things that have already been bundled. In fact, it costs more not to bundle them because they have to undo something that's already in the package naturally. So anyway, that's just a little bit. But having communications for a reasonable price instead of paying hundreds of dollars per month, really, you should be paying about $35 to $50 a month for everybody, and that's it. Anyway, I'll be talking more about those type of things next week. Free living means just that. You have your house paid for, you have your, and you might have your house in the city, but you have your house paid for, water, food, the basics, transportation, communication, all those basic things that we have in life, you have as close to free as possible. Forget about insurance policies. They're pretty much worthless. Become healthy. Don't use life insurance. It's not a bad thing to have a little bit of life insurance in this modern society, but forget about having expensive health insurance policies. You need one that has catastrophic coverage. What you do if you pay for a very high-end health insurance policy, what you're doing basically is paying for that high deductible that on a yearly basis. So if you go to the doctor a lot, which you really shouldn't be doing unless you really got problems, if I break my arm, I'll go to a doctor. But pretty much other than that, I haven't seen a doctor in years, and I don't intend to go see any. I don't want to. I don't even know where the doctor's office is, nor do I want to know. But like I say, if I broke an arm, sure, I'd go to a doctor. But basically, people are paying that high insurance policy, and if you are healthy, 100% or 99.99% of all health problems today are related to poor nutrition. Very simply. That's, for example, why I sell the Via Viente products, so people can start to get their daily dose of minerals and vitamins and antioxidants and enzymes, etc. Live enzymes, not the dead food that you find in the supermarket. And if you go to buy really good vegetables, etc., in the grocery store, very little food value in any of it. It looks real nice, but very little food value. So you have to basically raise your own food with good soil, and then you're going to start to become healthy. Once you start eating properly, exercising properly, I always say I'm not the kind of person that goes to a gymnasium and exercises and goes through all the machines. I've done that, but it's like for me, not interested. My gymnasium is the outdoors, sports, going out in the outdoors and hiking and doing all the other things that you do. Just something simple like gathering wood and building a fire at night, having a campfire with the people sitting around talking. Those are the kind of things that relieve stress. Stress is the biggest cause of sickness in the United States. People are way overstressed. Working jobs or, two jobs, trying to make ends meet, and only paying interest. I know so many people that are just trapped in that interest credit trap, and they can't get out. And I've known other people that finally just say, I don't care. I'm not paying anymore. I'm leaving. They save up a little bit of money, get themselves some land someplace, and like I say, try and get a little house or cabin of some kind on it, so you got one place to go when you first start, and then start building a place slowly. Everybody has their own view of that place in the country, their ideal place, and start building it slowly in your own labor. Also, consider that your exercise, that's your gymnasium, that's your mental health, that's your stress relief, that's your vision of the future. And then remember to keep your modern view of life along with it. You're not going back to the cave ages. You're taking modern life along with you. You're creating a beautiful environment for you and your family. You're living with nature. You're treating the earth properly, and you're dumping that monster system, monetary system, that's consuming everybody out there. So there's a lot of health benefits to doing this. That's another very important aspect of free living. You're free from stress. So I would say that's as much a freedom as living monetarily free, getting rid of that stress. And a lot of people don't understand this. They got the kids in school, and they got all these programs, and schools tend to consume people. They don't really understand this. The kids get to be 4 or 5 years old, and all of a sudden they start in school, and then the school's got all these programs, and you want to be part of everything, and the kids want to be part of everything, and you're driving here and there, and you're doing this, and you got to pay for it. And all of a sudden, you are consumed, and before you know it, the kids are out of high school. You don't even know your kids. You never spent time with them because the school, and you just ran yourself ragged, and you spent a lot of money, and you don't even know your kids. Hey, this is insane. So a big part of free living is stress-free living, getting to know your family. And you, in the years after the kids grow up, they're going to be very grateful for those years. At first, they might kind of fight it because all their friends are doing stuff and things like that. But as time goes on, they're going to appreciate the time that they spent out in the country doing those simple things, learning simple skills, having a campfire, cooking the food around a campfire, or just, fresh air before they go to sleep, swimming and going down to the lake, and, you know, all of those things, that's the kind of thing that you remember when you grow up. A lot of the city sports and things like that, you know, they're okay, but they're too intensive. Too many times people take themselves way too seriously with kids' sports today. You're better off being out with the family, get away, you know, enjoy the family life. And this is something that's been completely lost in modern society. So free living part two, get your place in the country, set it up, have a place, a roof over your head, water, a food supply, activities. That's your gymnasium, that's your health, that's your stress relief, and plan for the future, be able to sit out there and understand that if the whole thing falls apart, you got a place to go. That's going to give you a very good sense of well-being. Free living part two. Next week, I'll be talking about free living part three, modern technology and education in a primitive, eco-friendly world. And I'll just preface this by saying I saw something really cool. It's from Ghana. They're making bamboo bicycles. This is really was a really interesting thing. They're making bicycles out of bamboo. And these are really nice bikes, really well built. Something there again, eco-friendly, very lightweight, very economical, made from a natural material. Remember my webpage, jmccsci.com. I would say today or right now is about the last day if you're trying to buy presents for the holidays to get them there. In fact, at this point, I wouldn't guarantee it. If you buy something for someone, just tell them, hey, it's on its way, because shipping at this point is pretty iffy to try and get things there by the 25th. But we'll try. And just remember the webpage, jmccsci.com. This is James McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.